Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And I seem to remember that I'm Will Bluewater, Osio Aginli, Tahiju, Tahigu. We're feeling pretty good tonight. And we're going to be talking with Grandmother Avril Mondragon, the Taos Mountain Grandmothers. And there's just before the show, I was talking to her, and I just told her, hey, you know, whatever you want to talk about. I said, politics, religion, I don't care. But, no, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on in the world. And sometimes it's kind of nice to look beyond it and say, you know, what's it really all about? So anyway. Welcome, Grandmother Abril. How are you this evening?
Oh, wonderful. How moraiwaka nanania sa Abril Mondragon. And I'm calling in from, or visiting you from, the northern New Mexico region of the Blue Lake Mountains here. And I'm sending a prayer out and blessings of beauty to our ancestors here and wherever you are, those present and the future generations to come. And I thank you so much, Blue Otter, for having me back.
Oh, and, yeah, it's been a couple years.
No, has it? I don't know.
I think so, yeah. Late 2015, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I want to start out with this, talk a little bit about, you know, everybody's, you know, their mind is on the eclipse and what does this mean, and, oh, moving from this, going into the new world and all these things, and then there's all these, you know, incidents of terrible disrespect for one another and all that kind of stuff. So I want to start out with this quote by from Dan Efema, spiritual leader, eldest elder, Greasewood clan, stake priest, roadrunner, clan society father, Kachina father. I want to, and so what he said was, the final stage, called the Great Day of Purification, has been described as a mystery egg in which the forces of the swastika and the sun plus a third force symbolized by the color red culminate either in total rebirth or total annihilation. We don't know which, but the choice is yours. War and natural catastrophe may be involved. The degree of violence will be determined by the degree of inequity caused amongst the peoples of the world and in the balance of nature. In this crisis, rich and poor will be forced to struggle as equals in order to survive. So, at the time of moving from the third world to the fourth, when humans had become corrupted, that was the end of the quote, by the way. You know, so the movement from the third world to the fourth world, because we've lived here before, you know. The people had stopped living by the original instructions, so they were quarreling and fighting amongst themselves, you know, all this thing. And so we're at that time now, but we're also seeing something else, which also happened then, which was a prayer and unity coming together. What should we do? But there was a question that was asked while moving from the third world to the fourth world, which was what to take with us and what to leave behind, or who gets to go and who doesn't. The what and the who are interconnected in the great dream of all that is, creation's dream of life-giving life. So, having found, you know, I found that there is nothing that is inanimate, having no life, rather only a change of form. Therefore, all of creation is life-giving. Well, except I wonder sometimes about the moon, because the moon doesn't turn. You know, have you ever asked a question about that? I don't have any answers about the moon, but you know, we seem to be in this lineup, going into a lineup, a dance between the sun, the earth, and the moon right now. And I've often wondered about the moon, that she doesn't turn.
It revolves. It's relative to us. It rotates at the same rate that it revolves around us. So we always see that one face. But it's, you know, if you look into what they call it, was a movement some years ago. Intelligent design. I'm sorry. There you go. Anybody that's even thought about this, you know, they realize, hey, it looks like the moon might have actually been towed into place. And when one of the things that NASA did is they set up some seismic sensors on the surface, and they wanted to record what was going to happen when the service module finally crashed into the moon. And when it did, it rang like a bell. So geez, you know, they're really starting wondering, is the whole thing hollow, you know? And the the no, I'm not kidding. And they said that the soil on the moon is a pretty much uniform. It's not very deep, and it's pretty much uniform, mile or two, something like that. Not a whole lot, and so it's really, I don't know. It's strange. You know, we talk about strange stuff. You know, and you know, I guess that's what Indian folk do, because we look for the deepest meaning we can look for. You know, sometimes people might think it's medicine bullshit, but it's just us wondering out loud. You know. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh no, that's good. Thank you. Because I was wondering about that. You know, this
yep.
this deep listening. You know, as we have waves of energy right now coming through at all times from the great cosmic cosmos out there that's bathing us. You know, with all sorts of things. You know. So I want to go back to talk a little bit about the mystery egg, because for me and what Dan was, Ephema, or Elder was saying, because for me the mystery egg is like a seed, a dream seed of infinite potentiality, and has everything to grow into this mighty tree of peace that we are longing for at this time. And so maybe, you know, maybe it's time, you know, during this time, you know, some people want to continue to look outside of ourselves, you know, at the eclipse and all this stuff going on outside. But, you know, the other part of that is to be able to go inside, deeply, deeply listen to creation, deeply listening to life itself, you know. So when I look at the cycles of life-giving, maybe we can look at how to make healthy compost in soil to plant this seed, this dream seed, this mystery egg that we are focusing all of our aware potential, infinite potentiality that each one of us have for growing this healthy tree of peace together. So this question of what to take or what to leave behind, you know, when like trash, there's really no away somewhere else. Rather, I don't look at something like going away. Rather, I look at this time of change as a form in the way of composting, transforms compost into living life. It composts and makes something nourishing, and it's alive. And how long the composting takes or doesn't seems to play out in the what we humans make or don't. It's kind of like, you know, for example, when we look at uranium mining, nuclear energy, nuclear waste, and that's said to have a half-life of 500,000 years, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how many generations is that, and how far over the horizon do we need to be able to see to be able to understand the consequences of those actions, you know, that the action of doing that? And this is why I think there's a lot of concern, you know, and people are beginning to ask, well, what do we take and what do we leave behind? And there's sometimes we can see conflict, you know, it appears to be conflict externally, you know, when we see these eruptions of oppression and violence and all this warmongering, this old movie of warmongering going on, and we're saying we don't want to play this movie anymore. We're bored, you
yeah.
know. I'm really getting bored with the movie, you know, and I think a lot of us are. We want things that are nourishing. Another example about would be living simply with generosity and caring and sharing with all life, you know, whether it's the stone, the tree, the water, the bird, the you know, the earth mother, the blade of grass, you know. It's that caring, that reciprocity that we have with sharing our good feelings, feeling good in our thoughts, and those yeses to life, you know, that we have about giving something before we ask permission from that life to say, will you help me? Will you feed me? You know, these choices that we make. So those are some of the tangible aspects, but then I want to also mention those spiritual, mental, emotional, and there are a lot of distractions, you know. It's like every time, for example, Trump says something, you know, it's like there's a lot of other, we generate a lot of other media for the Trumpster, you know, by even paying any attention to him, you know. It's not that we aren't aware of it. We want to keep an eye on that, what he's doing, and how to use our creativity, our intelligence, and our wise ways and life ways to continue to nourish the positive that we want in life. But, you know, we could get very distracted by it. So, So I haven't had TV in more than decades and whatever. So in the spiritual, mental, emotional, we have a lot of distractions to staying focused on the transition and the kind of world and experiences that are desiring to be experienced. You know, we're falling in love with each other again. We're falling in love with ourselves again. We're going, wow. You know, we're like pretty cool, you know, and we're seeing the beauty in each other, which is something that is very, very precious, I think. So I'm finding that when within us, at the center of our beings being human beings, when we're able to perceive in the 7, 11, 13, and so on directions and multi-dimensions, what is it that wobbles us? What is it that distracts us? I ask that to myself. What is this distraction? Where am I getting? You know, I like what John Trudell said. You know, he said he's crazy, so since I like what he said, maybe I am too, and that's okay. But he said, if you really look at all the negative thoughts and feelings we have about ourselves, really look at them. They're like distractions. And then he said, you know, they were put there by someone else. And I would add that some experiences we have had were done or imposed on us by someone else's as well. You know, so I'm going, okay, how has this distracted been a major interruption to being human beings, living life in balance and harmony, you know? So it's kind of like, you know, when they say, you know, which wolf do you feed, you know, like that. There is another belief that creation itself, we being part of creation, wanted to experience these hurtful experiences. I have heard people say this, and I'm not sure about that because when I go within myself and I understand being made of beauty, I had come from beauty, and we are beauty, then this, what that's implying is that somehow we wanted destruction and violence on some level. That implication to me seems like it removes us from relational responsibility and the law of cause and effect. There's something else. I really liked what Teokas and Ghost Horse said. He said something like, it's hard to wake someone up who is pretending to be asleep. You know, that's what to me this is implying. You know, and I often ask when I go to youth conferences, I say, so when exactly did you fall asleep? Really think about that, because there are things that have become things that we're sharing with each other and have become almost like coined phrases or terms. And in that, we can become complacent within our own personal and collective investigation for truth. Because, see, you know, we talk about love a lot, but, you know, love and truth walk together here. And so in that truth, there's a deep, profound loyalty and belonging that we find in trusting and loving relationships, you know? That is what I'm kind of pointing at. So what the heck does this have to do with the quote I read from Dan Ephema, you know, about the mystery egg? So the way I'm seeing it is that we have a choice in what to bring and give and share and what to compost. Another elder mentioned the other day that her elders said, you know, you don't want to bring anything from this old matrix that's crumbling right now. Nothing. Don't bring any of it with you. You know, that was all as almost like a warning from her elders, you know. And I said, wow, you know, that's really potent. Don't bring anything. And here we're in this transitional period where we're often talking about, but this technology is going to fix it. And this things are, you know, but this one's okay. Because we all have various levels of addiction to technology, Facebook, you know, all these many distractions. I call them distractions, actually, you know. So right now, we are hungry for that belonging and connection that we need from each other that nourishes the infinite potentiality that each one of us has to bring and birth this new fifth world with the sixth sun. And I'll just repeat this because I've said it before on your show. Hopi time is we're moving into the fifth world. Mayan time is we're moving into the sixth sun. Neither the Hopi or the Mayan have disagreement. It's just that the Hopi have speak of nine worlds. We are moving into the fifth in their cosmology of their knowledge. The Mayans, we are great timekeepers, okay, time-space keepers. They're the experts. And for them, we are moving into what would be our sun's sixth life or cycle, if you will. So I just wanted to make that clarity for people. I allow myself during this transitional period to be in kind of a recovery, a healing, you know, because I recognize that every single one of us, all life, our Mother Earth, all life has been affected by what has happened in this dimension, in this 3D world, in this earth we're living. We have all been affected by trauma and drama, you know, we have been. And so in looking at that, and while we're looking at wanting to compost, what you say, this colonialism, this war, this hate, this prejudice, the lateral violence, and the list is long, but it's like a matrix. It's like, you know, there's you know, Kokan Wuti, let's say, you know, that would be the great weaver of all that is, the infinite potentiality, Kokan Wuti, the spider grandmother, spider, who weaves this beautiful tapestry of life-giving and relations of interconnectedness with all life. Okay, so we have that there. But we also have this web, this matrix, that we ourselves have created, full of this colonialism's war and hate and prejudice, lateral violence, all this, you know, all that stuff. So we're looking at these things at this time to move beyond the destructive warnings of our prophecies, And so this has everything to do with what and how we think and feel and do or don't do. When was the last time we actually gave our Mother Earth a break in winter? You know, and it wasn't just business as usual. It's been a long time. When was the last time we gave ourselves a break and just went into that stillness and stopped talking? Just really listened to ourselves, to all life, to each other. You know, it's very, very calming, that stillness within us. When was the last time so that we're that beautiful center of ourselves is, of our in, with our inner spirit there that can see in all directions and multidimensionally. We can see from the microcosm to the macrocosm like that. And we then open our potentiality to being able to choose what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And that, I think, is part of what John Trudell talked a lot about using our intelligence. And how do we know what our intelligence is if it has been imprinted with a whole lot of ideas and notions and thought patterns, kind of like an addiction or a bad habit, you know, that's been said, you know, we're not enough, let's say, or we need to be in this shape or that shape or whatever it is that's saying you can't get up and do something for the greater good of all life, your own life. You know, self-determination is not only on an individual level. If we talk about sovereignty or being free, it happens on first, it's an inner state of being, you know, and then you connect with all those other relations with that same inner state of being, and you have a moving life energy force that is unstoppable. And this is why the beauty of something like the what is rippling out from Standing Rock, for example. So, so if I can and look at my own quote unquote recovery or healing, like an alcoholic who decides to stay away from the bar and make new friends who are sober, etc. Okay, so just like an alcoholic that says, "Oh, these bad or these, I'm going to focus on this is as a problem," rather than switching the thought patterns to opportunity. Okay, opportunity. Or my focus in particular is on beauty, and as I said, you know, we are made of beauty. We came from beauty. We are beauty. So my focus, I like to focus on beauty. You know, some people call it the song or the frequency. It's who you are. It's the beauty of who you are, each person. So I like to focus on that, the beauty. And in the same way, if I look at the word purification, you know, it means that word means a lot to different people, depending on their culture and worldview. Some think this is Armageddon. Me, I think of this word purification as more like transformation, composting, and birthing, as in the rhythm of the magic of life-giving life cycles. Very different. You know, it's like, you know, in my cultural background, where we as young girls coming into womanhood were taught about the sacredness of life-giving and the kind of care for our body, our mind, our spirit, our care for becoming, what we do to become even pregnant. You know, what we do to cleanse our bodies for pregnancy. How we care for our children, our family, our homes, land, sacred sites, all this. When and why for fasting, for example, as a way of stopping talking, stopping doing, stopping participation with just all that is going on, as a way to cleanse or compost and renew our ability to listen, give and receive those insights from creation, you know. So these, all these things that are within many cultures, originary cultures throughout the world, you know, and that goes back to that thing, you know, when was the last time we gave Ma a break? You know, I mean, part of our winter cycle alone is here in the north as we're moving, you know, through fall into this sacred winter time of stillness, you know, how much do we actually give ourselves to do that, to do those, the sacred storytelling. Sacred storytelling was our part of our originary, quote-unquote, education classroom with our elders and the family members and the aunties and uncles and all that. That was part of our natural, originary, quote-unquote, school. It was not institutionalized, you know. It was the whole community taking part of that, you know. So what do we take with us and what do we leave behind, you know, keeps coming up. So I guess the other part I wanted to mention to you is, you know, our Earth Mother has many sacred fights. The Earth Mother herself is sacred. All of her is sacred. Everywhere we walk is sacred. However, you know, we have created, you know, sacred sites based on what she has told our ancestors, has shown our ancestors, okay? And so we have some new sacred sites being built today, you know, based on the deep listening to her. And so what I want to point out is that when I was in New Zealand for the Indigenous Water Conference there with the Maori people, we were looking at these sacred sites being like the acupressure points on a woman's body. If women are made just like the Mother Earth, then why? This is those sacred sites that have been created. If we look at those as acupressure points of why, it's like praying within your own temple of your own body, okay? And in healthy pregnancy, there's various different acupressure points or massage that women have. So I like to look at ceremony today with the intention of the birth of this world, that a healthy, beautiful world that we all want is to focus on that energy of healthy pregnancy and healthy birthing for our mother, particularly when we are doing our ceremonies, when we are praying, whether we're at home, because, you know, thought travels faster than the speed of light, so that's all connecting us all the time. So in this way, there's an energy and a powerful energy and a momentum to when we take the time to go into that stillness and listen, that we are connecting to our Earth Mother's dream. And she has been married to the sun, our father's sun, long before we were ever created. That love dance, that unconditional love dance has been going on billions of years. Okay. So as an example of unconditional love, those are my examples. The way Mother Earth and Father Sun treat each other. I mean, it's unbelievable how they treat each other. So loving. I mean, look at it. I just take a moment. Feel her. She is so powerful, you know, and so I don't feed those kinds of thoughts that we're killing her. I don't even like saying that. No, she is so incredibly alive. And so participating with her beauty, I mean, she is beautiful. No matter how much harm has been done to her, she is amazing. She's so beautiful. I am in awe all the time. So So I'm not a, I'm not about, you know, focusing on beauty doesn't make me be, feel in denial about, I'm not into denial. That's a river that, that doesn't exist, you know, because love and truth walk together. And so why is my focus beauty? Well, the process of focusing on beauty or focusing on who we truly are as beautiful beings, this process in itself, I found deep nourishing for the senses, our human senses of creativity, imagination, and infinite potentiality. So this beauty way is a way for me to focus on solutions and the positivity, which you know, all this creativity, imagination, and the potentiality, the energy in motion, those prayers in motion, we are literally that, that power. Intention, awareness, conscious intention and awareness, all of creation is alive in that conscious intent and aware. Okay, is awake, if you will. So I don't understand the sleepy thing. So we need this. We need this energy, if you will, to navigate beyond this matrix of destructive thoughts, feelings, and actions that have brought us all to the here and now, of moving from the fourth world to the fifth, from the fifth sun to the sixth sun. So I look at the eclipse and I go, oh, what a beautiful opportunity to really go inside and say, oh, I think I'm, and that's kind of actually what I have been doing for this last month. Since I think I last talked to you on the radio, I went to Standing Rock. I recently just came back from Sundancing with my older sisters and brothers and my relatives in Mexico. And I've been working on my first open house, if you will, for my visionary and traditional artwork. And it's kind of a local, it's through the our local Taos artist organization. They have an annual open studio tour this September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And so everybody's welcome. You know, if you're in New Mexico or know somebody who's coming through New Mexico, have them come over. And I'll probably make some atole, which is one of our traditional corn drinks. It's a beautiful corn soup. It's beautiful. I'll probably make something else. Everybody likes my pies. I might even do one of my plum pies or something like that. I don't know what I'm going to make. But I'm going to have something here, refreshments here as well. And then on the 6th, I'm going to go to be with the youth. There's a tribal immersion educational conference just down in Galisteo, New Mexico, and I'm going to go do that. And then after that, in October, I'm going to be spending some time with Grandmother Marian Skyweaver and some other elders at a conference as well. So that's my short term, what I'm going to be doing. But my house is getting ready. I've got my paintings up in my office, and I have cards and all this stuff going on, and also other items for because I like to raise funds so that I can donate to youth projects or indigenous programs, and I also, I've been a volunteer for the last 4 years for the New Mexico Department of Corrections Native American Spiritual Program. And so I do a little bit of secretarial work. I do, sometimes I make mountain smoke blend because they're tobacco free, so I gather the herbs and medicines around where I live and I make them up so that they have something to pray with, their natural smoke blend to pray with, like that. So I've been doing that for about 4 years, and so yeah, that's kind of like where I'm at.
Well, I think it's really interesting that the very first thing you popped was about the mystery egg. I'd forgotten, you know, when you read that that prophecy and you see, usually it's accompanied with a picture of Thomas Bunyakia holding up a drum, little drum on a stick. You know, it's got the some of the symbols that they're talking about, and you know. When I first read that, and I guess when Frank Waters wrote about that originally, I guess, you know, the World War II was over and the whole swastika thing was over and the color red, you know, that thing was over in 89. But, you know, all of a sudden, wow, we got kids fighting in the streets for the same things. And, you know, the first time I ever read that, I thought, well, yeah, there's got to be some changes, and we all hope they aren't going to happen without a lot of people getting hurt, but at least the world can't say that people like the Hopi and others, unlike what we're trying to do here, that we didn't try to warn people, because it could be god awful, and when it's over with, somebody might turn around and say to Creator, well, you didn't warn us. Well, yeah, you just weren't listening, you know. And so,
well, that's kinda... you know, the teachings and all the sacred prophecies, whether it's the Eighth Fire prophecy, whether it's the Eagle Condor prophecy, the Hopi prophecy, these have been around my whole life.
Yep.
And I'm old now. I'm getting older. Well, not really. I'm a young girl at heart, always. You know, my spirit is eternal, but you know, the body is getting older. Let's put it that way. So my whole life, you know, I've been aware of these teachings that have been given. So
yeah.
When I think that there's potentially someone who doesn't know that, you know, we can help people out and share those kinds of things. So
yeah.
I don't ever speak for the Hopi people. The Hopi people speak for themselves just like any other originary person. The only thing I speak about is my relationship from deeply, deeply contemplating what does this mean. Like on the last time I was on your show, I talked about always looking at those symbols in a linear fashion. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the feminine aspect is nonlinear. Okay. So I had to put them all together for me to be able to go, oh, this is metamorphosis to me. This means butterfly. The act mm-hmm. of metamorphosing. You know, when we look at the sunwise and the earthwise, you know, the going in sunwise direction, or we're going in the opposite of sunwise direction, some call the moon or earthwise direction, you know, we see that on our Mother Earth, you know, northern hemisphere, you know, if you're outside of her looking at the Earth, you can see the rotation of the pole. You go to the southern hemisphere, you see another direction going. And if you're inside of her, that's opposite. But you see this motion. And for me, you know, a lot of, you know, I've heard, you know, I've read all the things where they say, you know, it's the red hats of the Tibetans or China is going to come, you know, and everybody's, you know, shaking the saber again over North Korea, you know, and I want to go, oh, come on, you know, the red has to do with everything that's in our DNA, you know. We got to understand that we're made of all of this, everything. Everything that's created, you know, if we go back to the originary elements, we're made of that. We're made of earth and sky, the cosmos, the stars, the everything, water, earth, light, breath, winds, you know. We're made of that. So that is within the blood, the DNA, the red, the good Chankaluta, the red, good red road, you know. That's the way I relate to red. So I hear some people, you know, they go, oh no, red means anger, you know, and I'm going, I don't know. How, again, what do I feed my thoughts with?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What am I feeding? I haven't seen a color in that rainbow that isn't the most beautiful, delicious color in the whole world. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't met a color that I haven't liked and that wasn't delicious and absolutely just beautiful. So,
my second wife commented at some point. She says, you know, they can say what they want to about races, but she says, whenever you have a hybrid between any of two races, they always look beautiful and exotic, you know? So, yeah, you know, it's amazing.
Well, it's a funny thing, you know, all those things about race, and I wonder where we're running to.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to say about race.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
and we're all the same people. We just, you know, lived in different places so long, we started looking a little bit different or whatever, you know.
Well, you know, we were given a responsibility when in the third world to the fourth world. When the fourth world came, there were four originary peoples, and each one of those peoples were given a color of the corn, okay? And we know that we are what we eat.
Thomas O. Mills, in his book, The Truth, he says that if you go up in the extreme top of the pyramid, that there was a fresco up there depicting four couples, different races, obvious different facial and anyway, along with instructions on, you know, how to make a fish hook. And it was like, wow, this is survival instructions. If anybody's ever taken a glass and turned it upside down in a bathtub, you realize it leaves an air bubble out here up in the top of the glass, which led Thomas to wonder if maybe the pyramids weren't built knowing that there was going to be a great flood, and they chose some people to live through it, and they gave them what they thought they would need. And the way the entrances to the pyramid are, it flooded the lower part, but not the upper part. And they'd have interesting. It's a very small book. I haven't talked to Thomas in years and years. But it really made an impact on me. And the other book I think people ought to look into, you know, if you don't think the Hopi prophecy is important, and you don't think the people who don't think like we think, if you don't think they think it's important, then why did somebody write a book called The Invention of Prophecy and they made a very convincing somebody who'd been to law school might begin to believe that, yeah, this is true. They cooked up, you know, how the Hopi supposedly cooked the whole thing up and invented it and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, if something's true, you got to know somebody somewhere is going to try to kind of slam it or slur it or whatever. But if you ever run into that book, you ought to get it. It's called The Invention of Prophecy. I owned a copy a few years back and lost it in a move. But yeah.
Yeah, what I call prophecy is the ability of our ancestors to see over the horizon of humanity.
Yep.
You know, purely that's as simple as it is. Is they, you know, they can see over that horizon, and they also know the laws of cause and effect and are deeply deeply connected to those original instructions of living in balance and harmony with all life and Mother Earth.
Yep.
You know, because you know, it's like if we look at the original four and what they were asked to care for, these instructions on each one of them, you know, it seems like there was a forgetting that all those four original instructions were meant to work together. Okay,
yep.
It was no one being more than important than the other. They all have a balance. All the sacred elements are in balance with each other, you know. So, I think about those things. So, you know, when I think
going to high places, you know, we like to go to high places to pray. And, you know, what did Jesus say? You know, he said, when you see this abomination of desolation come, don't go home to get your coat. Go to the holy place. Well, before people started building temples, holy places were in the high mountains. And that's where. Yeah.
Again, I want to turn it back into the inner, because the holy place that we know that goes with us no matter whether it's at the top of the mountain or in
it's
the
true, yep.
deepest inner cave is within ourselves.
That's right.
And that relationship that we have with that deep inner knowing, that's power to me. You know, that is that center that what I said is we've got a lot of distractions going on. You know, a lot of distractions. You know, and so I feel like, you know, I'm really working on staying in that holy place within myself, because I slip up all the time. I fall flat on my face and I go, oh, I got to dust myself off again. You know, and, you know, keep returning to that place within myself so that I can navigate through, because there are going to be things that are going to happen and are happening and have happened that we need to be able to navigate through with all of our awareness intact, or as much as we can keep intact, for sure.
Absolutely, you know. And if my professors, religion professors at BYU used to say, hey, it only takes a couple of minutes to die, you know, and it's like it never happened. Then if you're crazy, and he didn't say this, but there is, you know, some indications in Christianity and even in Mormonism that there may be multiple more mortal probations. He says, and if you're crazy enough, that's what I said to him. I said, maybe if we're crazy enough, we'll agree to come back here for some stupid reason. You know, so, I know second wife. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I know that we're kind of coming up here. The hour has just slid by so fast, and it's always been a joy and an honor and a blessing for me to be with you, Blue Water. I just want to make one last shout out to a dear friend of mine.
Yeah.
Richard Peters, and say, and remember, laughter is healing, is medicine.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Well, we appreciate you coming on and keep in touch. And you know, I should tell, you know, all of our guests, hey, you don't have to wait to be asked to come back on. If you really feel a need to come back on, this is the White Roots of Peace Council. This is a way for you to get what you think Creator's asking you to get out to folks. And I get distracted very easy. And this hour every week is probably more for my benefit than anybody else's, because I'm just unrepentant about some things. But we sure appreciate you and wish you well. And, if someone were interested in helping you raise funds, how would they do that?
The easiest way is to contact me through my Media Arts Facebook page, which is Elise Eatlato. And that's spelled... Elise is spelled A-L-I-S, and that stands for All Life is Sacred, - Eatlato, I-T, LATOL. I'm on Facebook, and Eat Lot Toll means Life's Voice, Song, and Wife Story. So that's my media arts presence on Facebook, and and I also have a page, and it'll say A Mondragon Arts as well. So you should be able to find me that way.
Yeah, because I was looking for you, and I always only been able to find Taos Mountain Grandmothers. But hey, do me a favor.
Yeah, well,
would you send me a friend request from those two?
I'm already connected to you on Blue Otter on Facebook. You just don't know that. I'm pretty sure I am, but I'll go double check. And
but
I'll
check.
Just,
we appreciate
I'll just,
you.
Yeah, I'll say hi, Blue Otter, and let you know that that's me. I've had that presence
good.
Now since 2013.
Oh, great! Sounds good. All right. Well, folks, we'll see you again next week, and until then, we'll say, oh, let's see, we'll do something other than Native American. We'll just say sayonara. Good night,
bless
everybody.
Bless and beauty to each and every one of you. Toksha.
Hey, you bet. Aho. Good night, everybody.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
The hot sun on the dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still in a sacred manner. I live in a sacred manner. I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The road.